Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando. I'm bringing you the only podcast that's live and indirect from Providence, Rhode Island, via the capital city of Columbus, Ohio. And welcome to 2016. I'm very, very happy to be here. I'm very happy to be out on the airwaves in this new year. And hey, got a new sound, a new theme song, which I want to thank the people over at Incompetech.com, especially Mr. Kevin McLeod for that cool song called Some on the Rock. That website, Incompetech.com, is a great website for royalty-free music. And I dug the song, and again, thanks Kevin McLeod for putting that up there. I would also like to thank real quick as well, bensound.com, another great site for some royalty-free music. They will be providing me with the new Orlando's Faves music as well. So, kind of getting away from some of the stuff I've been doing in the past and freshening it up for 2016. So, there you go, some new music. And of course, as I mentioned on my last edition, Summation:2015, which I posted on New Year's Eve Day. I got big plans for 2016, and I'm kicking off the new year with a very special guest. A guest that, well, quite frankly, when I came into the business of professional wrestling, when I started with Fire and Ice Wrestling, I heard a lot about this gentleman. I heard quite a bit about him, and it was kind of weird that we never crossed paths until a couple of years ago. But I'm happy to have on this edition of the PVD Cast, the rugby thug, Trent Baker. Now, Trent has started in the IWA in Columbus, moved on to FIW, headed on down to IWA Mid-South, and we're going to talk all about his career. We're also going to talk about his new endeavor, which of course is one of the men behind New Ohio Wrestling. And New Ohio Wrestling has a big show, Now Too, as it's called, coming up January 23rd in Groveport, Ohio. The event will emanate from the Groveport Madison Middle School Central, which is right there on East Main Street, 7 o'clock bell time. It's a fundraiser for the Groveport Madison Marching Band. We're going to talk all about that as well. In fact, where you can get tickets and some of the matches and whatnot. So it's going to be a great podcast. I think that it's going to be a fun one. It's going to be an entertaining one. And hey, while we're talking about entertaining, let's talk about one of the most simple pieces of entertainment you can have in your hands, and that is a book. That's right, it's 2016. Maybe one of your resolutions is, I want to read more. Well, let me tell you right now, you definitely want to read Disposable Fiction Comics. Chris Allen and Jack Wallace have created the perfect comic book publishing company for those folks who want short, quick tales to read. You know, man, look, all you got to do is head on over to DisposableFictionComics.com, preview what they've got in their selection, and then make a purchase. Chris and Jack will appreciate it. You'll have something that you want to read, and you're still making sure you're getting your New Year's resolution done, man, because you said, hey, I gotta read more. So again, check out DisposableFictionComics.com. They got what you need if you need to read. You like that? It rhyme. Anyways, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a real quick break, and on the other side of that break is my conversation with the rugby thug, Trent Baker. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm John Orlando, and the man that's joining me here, live via Skype, the rugby thug, Trent Baker. Trent, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I did not win the Powerball lottery last night. apparently no one else did either, so there's still hope. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing well. And if I may, I'd like to just real quickly share this quick little story. It's really kind of weird. I don't know if even weird's the right word, but it's kind of odd that we're doing this podcast, because as I shared with you off air, you had left FIW, and I had come in about a year or so after you had gone, and all I heard from the promoter was these legendary tales of the rugby thug, Trent Baker. And I thought to myself the other day, it's weird that we never crossed paths until about like a year or 2 years ago when you started to come out to OCW shows,
And I just thought about that. I was like, man, I heard about this guy for months and months and months and months, and we never crossed paths till now, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like an urban legend and stuff. But yeah, I had left because at the time, Mark Stone, he had temporarily shut down FIW, and we weren't sure if he was going to restart it. And so, yeah, I started looking for work elsewhere, and by the time FIW restarted, like, the next year, I was already kind of working elsewhere, so mm-hmm. I never really came back to FIW.
Well, you were a favorite with Mark Stone, let me just tell you.
I'm glad. At least I had one fan. I had one supporter.
All right, well, let's start off with the question I ask everybody that's involved in this business of professional wrestling. How did you get started in pro wrestling?
Well, I live in Springfield. I'm from Springfield. Back in 97, I moved to Columbus to go to school. And let's just say that didn't work out. I dropped out about a year later. And but I was still living and working in Columbus. And I was flipping through channels, and I saw some local wrestling on TV. And, I mean, it looked like it was filmed in someone's basement. I mean, it was pretty minor league. But I was a wrestling fan, so I watched it, of course. And then there was a commercial for the free tryout for the wrestling school that the promotion was doing. So I'm like, oh, I got to go. I got to do this, you know. Wrestling was always something that I wanted to do, you know. I didn't think I would ever be a big star or whatever. I just wanted to give it a shot, see if I could do it. So I went down there, and I did the tryout. And there really wasn't a whole lot to it. I talked with the owner and basically just signed up, like, that day. And then I started going to the practices following that. Matt Mason, who you know quite well, was training at the time. He started a couple months before I did. And there were some other guys that were training at that time, Tommy Chill, Cyrus Poe, some other guys. And then, of course, you already had the established wrestlers that I would watch on TV, Shank Dorsey, Marcus Dillon, the Casanova Click, Too Cool, Trevor Lowe, Roadblock, to name a few. So, yeah, I trained at the school for probably about 6 months. And then I had my first match in, I believe, April of 99.
Okay.
Against Shank Dorsey. He had Wimpy Watson and Marcus Dillon by his side. Marcus gave me a chair shot to the back that hurt a lot. But
do you recall what you were feeling on that day? Were you nervous? Were you anxious? Were you pretty confident? Or
I was nervous. It was actually, I guess technically it was the main event, although really it was just the last match. But I picked up my singlet that day from the K&H nearby.
Oh, yeah. Out in Johnstown, right? Out in Johnstown, Ohio. Okay.
Yeah, this shows you how, like, prepared I was. I got it the day of the show, so I had never tried it on. And so before the match, I'm putting it on, and I'm kind of like, yeah, this doesn't really fit that great. But I had a pair of nice boots. I had some really nice boots. That kind of made up for it. And there was a point in the match, I remember, I was kind of making a comeback, so I pulled my straps down a la, you know, Jerry Lawler. But it was kind of more because the straps just kept falling down anyway. So it wasn't so much I was trying to really, you know, bring the fire, but I was tired of the straps, so I just pulled them down. Trevor Lowe, he did commentary on the show, so you'd always refer to them as bra straps, which really upset me at the time. But looking back, you know, I laughed. But yeah, I mean, for a first match, it was okay, you know. And Wimpy Watson, he was there, and, you know, God rest his soul.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he would always get on to me during the matches and stuff. But yeah, I mean, like I said, first match was okay. And so I was Trent Baker at the time.
Okay.
There were a lot of Trents in wrestling, so I liked the name. But I was just this white meat baby face in an ill-fitting singlet. I didn't really have a character. I wasn't very good on the stick. And one day I was reading a Wrestling Observer newsletter, and I was reading about a Japanese wrestler who did rugby before he got into wrestling, Like, it wasn't part of his gimmick. It was just part of his background, something he did. I got to thinking, I was like, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a wrestler do a rugby gimmick. And rugby's not that popular in this country, but it's pretty popular in the UK.
Okay, yeah.
So I was like, you know, I think I could probably do a halfway decent British accent. I don't remember exactly how I came up with the name Rugby Thug, but it rolled off the tongue.
Now, was that in the IWA, or was that something that you debuted when you moved over to FIW?
That was in IWA.
Oh, okay.
The way that we debuted it, I was tagging with Seal Hustler against the Casanova Click, and I turned heel on Hustler, and it was revealed that I actually was a British rugby player who was told to act like an American and disguise my accent.
Okay.
So I got a jersey made and some, you know, shorts and stuff. So I looked, and I bought a rugby ball as well at one of the sporting goods stores. And so, yeah, the next week I came out as the Rugby Thug Trent Baker. And I was managed by Precious John Ellering, and I was part of the group with the Casanova Click. And yeah, once I became the Rugby Thug, I became more comfortable in the ring and just really kind of got into the character and became a little more entertaining than just Trent Baker.
Sure. And I think that probably it's true what many people say, is when you create that character, you get a chance to feel more comfortable because you're not the same person.
Right.
Would that be accurate in your case?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes people say, like, the best character is yourself, just turned up.
Yeah.
But for me, I was cool just playing, like, somebody completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like an actor playing a role. And so, yeah, I continued to wrestle for that promotion for a little while. And then another group, FIW, started up, and some of us went over to that group and wrestled there. This was probably, like, late 99. Early 2000, and yeah, we went over to FIW.
Which, if I may ask, and real quick, before we jump into your move to FIW, I read online that you had one match that ended kind of badly for you, that meaning you had to spend the night in the hospital, and it only happened once. Is that accurate?
Oh, you're referring to the one with Albie.
Yeah, Albie Damned in Lancaster. You said that,
yes,
that was the only time in your entire career that you ended up going to the hospital. And I think that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that was one of my early, early matches.
Okay.
I'd only had a handful of times.
Do you want to maybe tell the listeners what happened in that match? Because I know.
Yeah, sure. It was in Lancaster. Was it the Desert Rose?
I believe
yes.
So. Yeah.
And it was myself and versus Albie Damned, who is now Lennox Norris, the bronze one. And I always enjoyed working with Albie. But at the time I was just really green and really nervous. And, so the match was, yeah, pretty bad. And I had, whipped Albie into the corner and I jumped and did a splash and he, moved and I hit my head on top of the ring post. And yeah, it was pretty bad. I didn't knock myself out, but I was pretty loopy. And we finished the match, took a choke slam from Big Country after the match, which kind of had me coughing up blood later. So that was a rough night. But, yeah, I went to the hospital just because I hit my head pretty bad on the ring post. And but, I mean, got it like a CAT scan and everything. So everything was – there was no damage. I just had a really bad headache. And that was the only time that I ever had to go to the hospital. Really, I was really fortunate that I didn't have like any serious injuries. Towards the end, my body was kind of taking its toll on my body, which is why I got out of it. But yeah, the match with Albie, not one of my finest moments in the ring.
Well, I thought it was remarkable that was the only time that you were in the hospital, given the fact, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit, about some of the other type of matches you've been in. That where, you know, it's probably a given that you're going to get hurt. And, you know, we'll talk maybe a little bit more about that here in a moment. But, okay, let's talk about FIW. So were you one of the individuals touted to come over to FIW? Because the story always goes that Mark Stone had talked to a few folks about coming over, jumping ship from the IWA, coming to FIW. Were you part of that, or were you a later addition to the roster, so to speak?
Yeah, I was part of the group that jumped ship. I hadn't talked to Mark directly. Shank actually was the one that mentioned it to me, and it sounded good to me. So, yeah, me and Shank and Matt and Marcus and Albie, I think he might have came a little later. But, yeah, we all kind of jumped ship to FIW. And Precious Paul, or not Precious Paul, Precious John. Sorry, I'm thinking of a different manager. But yeah, he joined me too, so he's my manager in FIW. And CO Hustler, Big Country, they came over as well.
Did you feel a little bit of heat with the IWA for coming over?
Yeah, I mean there was a little bit of tension there naturally. I mean, anytime you have two groups running in the same city, there's going to be a little bit of tension there, but nothing like too serious. I think we just kind of needed a change of scenery, and FIW seemed to be the place to go at the time. And so I spent most of 2000 in FIW, feuded with CO Hustler and Mason when he was the Prodigy. Had some matches with him, and I think it was around September, October is kind of when Mark temporarily shut the promotion down. And so I started looking for other promotions to work with outside of Columbus, and ended up getting booked for IW Mid-South near Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are familiar with ECW from back in like the mid-90s, we'll probably remember Ian Rotten. He had a pretty violent feud with Axel Rotten that kind of put ECW on the map as far as like the hardcore stuff. But he owns IW Mid-South, and he was the booker and everything. So once I went there, I debuted like December actually of 2000. And once I started getting booked there, I pretty much worked there. Not exclusively, but I spent most of my weekends down there for about the next year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back real quick to FIW, because yeah. were you the U.S. champ up there?
Yes, okay. I won the U.S. title because like when me and Shank and everybody went over there, Mark had his wrestlers from before where he was running shows kind of outside of Columbus. And so he kind of had his roster, and at the time there was a wrestler called the Diamond Stud who was the U.S. champion. So I defeated him for the U.S. title in Marysville, and then feuded with CO Hustler. Probably my best match in FIW was against Hustler in Crooksville. And then, yeah, I was still the U.S. champion when I left, so I never actually lost the title. I'm not sure what happened to it after then. After I left,
I think it was rechristened as another title. I think it was the American Heavyweight Championship, the FIW American Championship. There was the funny story, because I remember maybe it was my second or third show. Rip Malibu was the FIW champion, and then I think it was called the American Championship.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure to this day if it was a rib, but I said, okay, what would you like me to announce your weight and where you're from? And he goes, 235 from Huntington Beach, California, and don't call me the bi champion. And I looked at him and go, I wouldn't, because that's stupid. He goes, good. The last guy did. I'm not the bi champion. I'm like, oh, okay. And I still don't know if he was ribbing me or if he was dead serious. And I was like, duly noted, you're not the bi champion. And
yeah, I wouldn't know what to make of that either. And, you know, I guess maybe technically I'm still the FIW U.S. champion.
There you go.
I never lost it. So
what were your thoughts on Mark Stone?
Mark always treated me well. He treated me with respect. So I really have no bad things to say about him. He tried, you know, he really tried to get exposure for FIW and to get businesses and sponsors involved. from what I've seen, like the footage that I've seen of FIW after I left, it looks like he really kind of got the ball rolling, and the shows overall looked better than when I was there. Really no complaints.
Do you think that was the major difference between the IWA and FIW? Was this idea of having more corporate sponsors, having maybe a flashier presentation to the wrestling rather than say the IWA? Like, what do you think was the major difference between those two? Or did you even notice that there was a difference?
Yeah, I mean, there were things that Mark did to try and get the exposure, you know, running shows like Media Play and getting different sponsors involved. Didn't seem at the time there was as much of that at IWA. So, yeah, that probably was the biggest difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's jump to IWA Mid-South. You said that you just started kind of working there. At this time, were you still living in Columbus, or were you back in Springfield? Where were you commuting from point A to Louisville?
Yeah, I moved back to Springfield.
Okay.
In earlier 2000, I think in the spring.
Okay.
So I was driving from Springfield to, it was actually Charlestown, Indiana is where
they... Oh, yeah, because they had moved. They were in Louisville for a while, and then they moved over to Charlestown. Okay.
Right. So from Springfield to Charlestown was about 3 hours. And a lot of times I would ride with Tarek the Great, because he would live in, he lived in Hamilton, so I would pick him up. And Chris Hero would ride with me sometimes, because he would live in Dayton. And then when Shank, when he had his stint in IWA, he would ride down with me. So, yeah, it was about 3 hours, each way. I debuted in, like, December. I did a run-in, and I attacked Corporal Robinson and cut a little promo after the match. I was kind of anti-hardcore.
Okay,
and
all right.
And Corporal was one of the hardcore guys. So
right.
I came in and saying that I'm a British athlete, and I don't do the hardcore stuff. And so me and Corporal feuded for quite a few months, actually, and it kind of led up to me eventually doing some of the hardcore stuff.
Okay.
But until then, you know, I kept it just regular matches, because
gotcha.
Fans really wanted to see. We teased it, didn't quite give it to him until the end.
So how did you get booked down there? Did you send tapes down, or originally, like, how you just kind of, was it through, you know, somebody that knew Ian Rotten? Like, how did you end up down there originally?
Yeah, there was a list of promotions that I found online.
Okay.
They were one of the promotions that I sent a tape and a resume, Chris Hero told me that he was actually at Ian's place when Ian was looking at my tape and stuff. And me and Chris had met at a VCW show in Piqua.
Mm-hmm.
And he had remembered me, and he kind of put in a good word for me. So
okay.
That's how I got booked down there.
Okay. Can I ask, because the big rumor about IWA Mid-South was the locker room. Is it as crazy as it's rumored to be?
I guess up until that point, the other locker rooms that I had been in, some guys like to engage in some, you know, recreational gimmicks.
Uh-huh.
I guess you could
and
say.
Then the giant piss trash can too, and
yeah, there was the piss bucket because they did have a bathroom. The building that Ian ran at was an old diesel garage. And there was a bathroom, but you'd have to kind of, the fans could go in it too. So it was better if you did your business elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, there was a bucket. So.
I actually think that to share the story, and I'm not sure if you're aware of it, I was listening to, I'll say it. I was listening to the Art of Wrestling, and there was a spot with Colt where he had Chris Hero on for a few minutes at the beginning of a podcast, and he had mentioned you. He goes, remember the first time that poor guy came down? He was, like, completely shocked by the behavior that was going on back then.
Yeah, the story behind that, I think Chris and I were chatting on the old AOL Messenger.
Oh, man, there you go.
Yeah, that tells you how long ago that was. And I had mentioned that. I like to have a beer every once in a while, but that's about it. I don't do anything really stronger than that.
Right.
But yeah, I had seen some guys engaging in what I thought was smoking crack. This is how like naive I was, but apparently you can smoke, the wacky tobacco out of a pipe. And so that's what they
okay. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, That's
funny.
So I thought they were smoking crack. They were smoking weed. Of course, once I told Hero that, it was, that was it. Everybody knew. And
oh, he never let you forget that, huh?
No, well, he hasn't forgot it if he's telling it on Cabana's podcast 13, 14 years later. But it is, it's a funny story, I guess.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, so while in IWA Mid-South, this is the biggest question I had as soon as we agreed that we were going to do a podcast. Like, you were involved in various different hardcore matches. You participated in the King of the Deathmatch tournament in 2001. How do you get yourself prepared for that match? Because let's be honest, everyone that stepped foot in the ring as a competitor knows it's dangerous. But then when you add this level of, we have to manipulate thumbtacks or light bulbs or whatever, it goes up a notch. So how did you get prepared for that? Was there any difference? Did you just go, hey man, it's another match and it is what it is? Or like, how did you get ready for it?
Yeah, I wasn't exactly like a hardcore guy, but yeah, I did some of the hardcore, and in the 2001 deathmatch tournament, the first match I had was against Tower of Doom, who was a veteran at the time, and he was a hardcore guy himself, and it was a thumbtack match, and yeah, you just kind of have to go into the match with the mindset that, yeah, I'm probably going to come out of this a little mm-hmm. banged up, but it's business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was a point in the match where he was actually sticking the thumbtacks in my forehead. It wasn't too bad. The guys that were, the hardcore guys, they did a lot more extreme stuff than what I did. So the matches they had were crazier than what I did. But the finish to that match was pretty unique. I had a manager at the time, Jim Fannin, and he got involved, and he was holding Doom's arms behind his back, and Doom had wore a toboggan to the ring, and it was on the ring post. And so I went over and I grabbed the toboggan, and I just started putting thumbtacks in the toboggan, and then I put the toboggan on his head, and then I hit him over the head with a chair, and that's how I won the match. So I thought that was kind of clever in a disturbing kind of way. But and then the second match I had was against Rolling Hard, who, rest in peace. He passed away a couple years ago. He was mm-hmm. a good dude. I always enjoyed working with him. And it was a staple gun match. I took some shots from the staple gun, and it doesn't tickle, but, you're not going to, be seriously injured from it either. And I got to take home, a couple extra bucks that got stapled to my forehead. but I lost that match. That was it for me, mm-hmm. thankfully, because the finals of the tournament were a lot more hardcore than the matches that I had.
And then you also said you also had some hardcore matches with Corporal Robinson. So what were some of those matches?
Yeah, Corporal and I, that was one of my big feuds. There was a match, I think it was kind of like a false count anywhere at False Count Anywhere match. One of the most painful things that I experienced down there was actually, if you look at it, it looks kind of silly, but it was one of those plastic wiffle ball bats, which on its own wouldn't be, dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Then, because the fans, they would bring the weapons. So some fan took the wiffle ball bat and put thumbtacks on it. So when he hit me over the head with it, it hurt kind of.
Wow.
Hurt pretty good. Actually, probably the best match he and I ever had was like a lumberjack match. This was kind of like the end of the feud, but I don't, you know, unfortunately I don't have video of that. There was another thumbtack match. It was, Corporal and Suicide Kid, versus me and the Shadow Kid, which was, the Suicide Kid's, opponent, who he was feuding with at the time. It was Adam Gooch under a mask. But they did a pretty crazy spot where Kid, like, went up to the rafters and jumped off one of the beams and put, Kid through a table. So, luckily I wasn't, on the table, so Gooch took the brunt of that one. There were some other matches. Getting hit with the light tubes. Fortunately, I didn't take a lot of those, but I took a few to the back. Those always stung pretty good.
Yeah. So, if I may ask, was Ian Rotten, he was still the matchmaker during this time, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Did he ever put any pressure on you to do something that you didn't feel comfortable doing? Was there a little autonomy and Ian would come and go, here's some ideas, this is what I want to do, and could you go yes, no, or how did that work, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, he never really asked me to do anything too extreme.
Okay.
So really, like, when I first got there, he, like, kind of protected me because he wanted to do the storyline that I was an athlete. And
sure.
Anti-hardcore, so I didn't really have to do a lot of the stuff when I first got there. But, I mean, if there was something that I didn't feel comfortable doing, I felt like I could have said something, but
okay.
I didn't really feel like he really asked me to do anything too crazy.
Okay.
There was one time, it was myself and Bull Payne versus Ian and Axel, and it was an I Quit match. And towards the end, I was tied up in the ropes, and Ian and Axel both had chairs, and I knew what was coming. So, I went ahead and said, I quit. So, in my mind, the match would be over, but they still end up giving me like a double chair shot at once, and that hurt a little bit, but yeah, I mean, the stuff that I did down there, I dabbled, but not.
Yeah, which you ended up being a two-time IWA Mid-South Heavyweight Champion.
Yes, I defeated Mean Mitch Page for the title the first time, and Suicide Kid on the second, the second time I won the title. At the time there were a lot of good young talent, and I'll just proceed to name drop CM Punk, Hulk Hero, as I'd mentioned before, BJ Whitmer, Ace Steel, and I got to work with all those guys, and he would also bring in a lot of name talent as well, especially after ECW went out of business in 2001. So I got to work with Road Dogg, Blue Meanie, Tracy Smothers, of course, The Rottens, Hito from Japan. And being the champion, you know, I kind of got that opportunity.
And I assume that you learned a lot from some of those, especially the veterans, you know, the people like, you know, the Blue Meanie, like Tracy Smothers. I assume that you learned quite a bit about the about your craft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember after I'd wrestled Tracy, and we sat down after the match, and he was like, you know, yeah, this is, you know, this is what you did good. This is what, you know, you need to work on. You know, you could have done this and that. So, yeah, it was just a great opportunity. And there were other wrestlers down there that I didn't get to work with, but I would, you know, watch, like Jerry Lynn. Simon Diamond was down there too, Spike Dudley and stuff. So, yeah, IWA always had the reputation of being like the hardcore promotion, but they had a lot of good actual wrestling down there too. I got to compete in the 2001 Sweet Science 16 tournament, which is now the Ted Petty Invitation.
Oh, okay.
And I got to wrestle Nova from ECW and lost in the first round, but he went on to win the tournament, so, you know, no shame in that.
Did you kind of know, and this is probably a very pointed question for you, but did you know, or did you recognize the fact that Punk, Cabana, Hero, some of those guys were going to go on to do big things in the wrestling business? Could you tell? Or was it kind of, hey, these are some talented guys, they're just as talented as this person, that person, this person? Or was there something special about them that you could look at them and go, yeah, this guy may have it?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely recognize the talent that they had. And I thought at the very least these guys are going to get tryouts with WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the time, like, going to Japan was, like, the big dream of a lot of independent wrestlers. So I was like, yeah, these guys are, I'm sure, going to start getting booked in Japan, and they did. And then, it wasn't long after that Punk and I think all of them really got shots in TNA and then eventually Ring of Honor.
Right, yeah.
And just went on and became big stars in wrestling. But, yeah, I definitely could recognize at the time, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I didn't know Punk was going to be the megastar that he was.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, he certainly deserved it. I mean, he was a workhorse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to wrestle, like, every single weekend. You know, that was his goal and stuff. So he just had that drive.
Did you want to go to Japan? You mentioned that was the goal for a lot of indie guys. Did you – was that one of your aspirations when you were working in IWA Mid-South?
If the opportunity would have came up, I would have taken it. But sure. In all honesty, I don't think that I was good enough really to go to Japan. I mean, there were guys, you know, way better than me that weren't getting opportunities. So, mm-hmm. No, I mean, like I said, it would have been nice, but I, you know.
So after IWA Mid-South, is this when you started to phase out of wrestling? Because you had mentioned earlier on in our conversation that your body started to tell you, hey, it's time to start slowing down. Or did you go and work some other places and then decide to kind of hang her up, so to speak?
No, IWA Mid-South was my last promotion that I worked for. My last match, actually, was against Hiro in 2002. It was a loser leaves town for 90 days match, and I lost, and 90 days turned into 13 or 14 years, which really, it wasn't exactly the plan. I knew, like I said, it was taking its toll on me physically, and I mm-hmm. needed to take a little bit of a break, and I went back to school and just did some other stuff and just got out of wrestling and lost touch with all my old wrestling buddies. And it was actually, it's kind of a funny story of how I kind of got back into wrestling. 1 year at work, we decided to dress up as wrestlers. It was my buddy's idea. And at the time, everybody knew I was a wrestling fan, but none of them knew that I actually used to wrestle because it's something that I never, you know, it's not, I don't.
No, I look, you're preaching to the choir. I understand. In the shoot job, sometimes it's, I don't want to say awkward, but it's, yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah.
I understand wholeheartedly.
I'm in no way, like, embarrassed or anything like that. No. It's just one of those things. I'm kind of a quiet guy.
Yeah, and people don't understand it. Like, I think that sometimes people don't get that, you know, the reason why you do it. So I'm with you. I totally understand. And those people listening at home, you've probably heard me talk about that before, that it's kind of it's odd. Unless you're in this business, you don't get
right.
it, you know.
Right.
So.
So I decided to dress up as Rowdy Roddy Piper. He was one of my, you know, favorites as a kid. So I bought a cheap wig. I already had the Hot Rod shirt. I bought a cheap kilt on eBay. And then I thought, you know, if I'm really going to make this costume legit, I've got to wear my old wrestling boots. And I was like, you know, if I wear the boots, I know somebody's going to ask me, where'd you get the boots? And I could, you know, I could fib and say, oh, I bought them on eBay. Or I could tell them the truth. So I dressed up as Piper. And then when I got to work, I didn't get the memo that they decided to go with a different theme. So I was dressed up as – another guy dressed up as Rick Rude, but everybody else had dressed up as something different. Sure enough, somebody asked me about the boots, and I was honest. I said, yeah, I used to wrestle, and of course, everybody found out, and they're all excited and stuff. I didn't really have any of my matches on YouTube. There was one match from IW Mid-South, and so they were able to see that match. And I decided to start putting some of my matches online so they could see the rest of it and stuff. Because they never saw me wrestle live or anything like that. So this was the only way they were going to see it. So I started putting matches on YouTube. And then Dangerous Damian Cass saw one of our matches and commented on it. And so I got to talking to him, which led to me kind of reconnecting with everybody on Facebook and getting back in touch with Shank and Mason and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this was about this time that we went to a pro wrestling live show in Black Lake, I think 2014.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a mini reunion of sorts. This was when Shank, you know, Donnie, was talking about opening a promotion of his own. Because, you know, there's quite a few good groups in Ohio. You know, you've got War and Lima, Rockstar,
yes.
And Rockstar and Dayton, OCW, Coshocton, AIW, Cleveland. But when you talk about Columbus, it's kind of like crickets chirping. You know, it's like there's no reason Columbus shouldn't have a quality promotion that runs on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it since we're on that mind thought. Even though I have a couple other questions, but I'll save them.
Oh yeah,
sure. New Ohio Wrestling. You had your first show in August, and many folks that listen to this podcast, you know that Shank Dorsey was on Hot Commodity, yes. And Matt Mason was on talking about them. And if I may, real quickly, you need to go back and listen to them if you haven't heard them. So there you go, listeners.
I listened to both of them.
Yeah, see, there you go. The Rugby Thug listened to them, so you need to.
My goal was to be as entertaining as Mason. Yeah. I don't know if I've accomplished that.
Well, those are big boots to fill, man. Those are big.
It
boots
is.
To fill.
He's got the gift of gab, and I don't know if I necessarily have it, but I strive for it.
So the next big show for New Ohio Wrestling is coming up here in a couple weeks, January 23rd. It's in Groveport, Ohio. It's going to be at Groveport Madison Middle School. Which I believe is on Main Street, correct?
Yes, it is Groveport Madison Middle School Central. Cause yes, there's three middle schools, North, South, and Central. We will be at Central. If you put Groveport Madison Middle School Central into a Google search, it'll come up Groveport Madison Junior High. It's okay. They're both one and the same.
Okay.
Located 731 East Main Street, right on that main street in Groveport. Can't miss it. Right across from the Ace Hardware. But yeah, it's going to be a benefit for the Groveport Madison Marching Band. So proceeds from ticket sales, concessions, and whatnot will go to the band.
What can fans expect if they come out on January 23rd? What can they expect from New Ohio Wrestling?
They're going to expect a good show, a good family-friendly show. We have seven big matches. One of our featured matches is Marion Fontaine versus Robbie Superstar, two guys you know quite well.
Yes.
This was actually a match that was supposed to take place at Now One, but it did not take place because, as you know, Robbie has an ego, and he didn't think that the fans of Columbus were worthy enough to see him wrestle.
Oh, so, notice how yes. I'm not shocked by that. Notice
exactly.
How I'm not shocked.
So he sent his sidekick, No Shame, Jimmy Shane, in his place to take on Marion Fontaine. And much to the delight of the crowd, Fontaine won in what is the first ever match in New Ohio wrestling history, by the way. And, of course, this didn't sit well with Robbie, so he's going to do what Jimmy Shane could not, and he wants to defeat Marion Fontaine, and that match will take place at Now 2. And Jimmy Shane will be in the corner of Robbie Starr for the match, so I'd say the possibility of shenanigans from Shane probably pretty high.
Yeah. Well, how about another match the fans should keep an eye out if they come out on January 23rd? What might be another high-quality match, a high-caliber match that's going to entertain a lot of folks?
Yes. Well, this matchup stems from an incident that happened at Now One. Dark Star Matt Taylor will take on Juice Jennings.
Mm.
And at Now One, Juice wrestled Celeste Taylor, and it was a very, very good back-and-forth match. Right before that match, Dark Star and True Grit Bruce Gray went out and really just stole the show. They had a great match, match of the year candidate, in my opinion. But after Juice defeated Celeste, it wasn't enough for him. He decided to put the boots to Celeste afterwards. Dark Star saw this, didn't agree with it, came out. Ran off Juice. There's been bad blood between the two as a result, and they're going to get a chance to settle the score at Now 2, January 23rd.
And go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. It's going to be a good match. Juice and Dark Star, as you fully know, very good wrestlers. So
yes.
We're expecting big things from that match.
And there's a whole host of matches, and I don't, you know, I want people to go and check out the matches.
Yes.
Definitely go to facebook.com/New Ohio Wrestling They're all right. The matches are listed right there, folks.
Yes, seven big matches are all on there.
And you can also check you guys out over on Twitter at New Ohio Wrestling minus the G.
Yes.
And tickets, if you're interested, it's going go to, and this is a little bit of a trick, but it's now two, the number two, at eventbrite.com. And Eventbrite is spelled EventBrite.com. And you can get your tickets there.
Yes, now two.eventbrite.com. Yes, you can purchase your tickets there, or you can get them the night of the show. It'll be $12 for adults, $8 for kids 12 and under, and absolutely free for kids 2 and under.
And 7 o'clock bell time, by the way. I don't think we've
that
mentioned that either.
Yes, doors open at 6 p.m., and the show will begin promptly at 7.
All right, while we wrap some things up here real quick, as we're getting up to about 50 minutes or so, you mentioned that Rowdy Piper was a favorite of yours.
Yes.
Growing up as a kid. Who else were some of your other favorites?
I liked Bret Hart. I was a fan of the Hart Foundation. Later on, when I got kind of into my teen years and ECW was taking off, I was actually a pretty big fan of Sabu. I just always thought he was crazy and all the stuff that he did. And he was actually down there in IW Mid-South when I was down there, so I got the opportunity to meet him. And yeah, so that was kind of like my inner 14-year-old was pretty excited about that. But I had to kind of stay cool, you know, when I met him. I was just a fan of everything. I watched all of it, you know, WWF, NWA, then of course later ECW, just, you know, whatever I could get my hands on, whatever tapes I could get, you know, at the time, you know, kind of dating myself, but yeah, Piper was always a favorite. Unfortunately, he passed away the day before our first show.
Yeah, you're right. He did.
Yeah, so we did a 10 bell salute for him at the beginning of the show. So it was kind of bitter, you know, bittersweet.
Who would you say has been your toughest opponent?
Probably Chris Hero.
Okay. Why do you say that?
We were in a group called the Superheroes. It was myself, Hero, Punk, BJ Whitmer, and we had Jim Fannin and Dave Prazak as our manager. And the group eventually split up, and I feuded with him. And we just had a lot of matches together. And he was one of my best opponents, one of my toughest opponents. And you know, I always enjoyed working with him. And I knew every time that I went out there with him, it was gonna be a tough match, and he was gonna bring it. So yeah, always respected him. Some other tough opponents, wrestling Ian Rotten. Those were some of my more painful matches. Just as far as the forearms to the face and whatnot. I definitely felt it after matches with him.
All right.
But you know, Shank Dorsey, going back to the IWA days, you know, he was always a tough opponent as well. So I would say those three were some of my toughest.
Well, as we wrap up here, we're gonna play a little game, and I don't know if you're familiar with this game because it hasn't been around too long on the PVD cast, but this game I like to call Tag, Feud, or Job.
Yes.
So I'm going to throw out three names, all right, of three different wrestlers that you have to determine which wrestler would you like to tag with, which wrestler would you like to feud with, which wrestler would you like to job to. Now, keep in mind that you have to, when I talk job, you're not getting anything in. It's going to be it's going to be a squash, and it's going to be over a period of time for all three of these. So you're going to tag with this person for a while, you know?
I would be enhancement talent.
Correct. Feud or job with. All right?
Okay.
So there you go. So we'll throw out three names. You tell me which individual you'd like to tag with, which one you'd like to feud with, and which one you would do the job to each and every night for a small amount of time. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to keep it sports themed. I'm going to pick three wrestlers that have sports themes to them.
Okay. I see what you're
saying.
All right. Okay, yes.
Okay. And keep in mind that these wrestlers in their prime. We're not talking about them current day, but.
Okay.
So here you go. Tag, feud, or job with Johnny Polo, The Goon, or Thurman Sparky Plug.
I would tag with Johnny Polo.
Okay, why? Could I ask why?
I don't know. Well, because his gimmick, a polo gimmick, a rugby gimmick, they're both kind of on the outskirts.
Okay, white collar type of sports. Okay.
Yeah, they're kind of on the not really mainstream.
All right.
So yeah, I would tag with him. I would feud with the Goon, just because, you know, hockey players like to fight, rugby players like to brawl, and I would job to Sparky Plug, because he would probably, I would have no say in the matter, most likely. I'm sure he would probably take charge of that.
If, first of all, before anybody emails me, I'm going to say that NASCAR is a sport. I know there's that argument. It's not really a sport. Well, we're going to go with that. Okay. We're going to say it's a sport for argument's sake, man.
That's true.
Hey, man, Rugby Thug, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. And, hey, folks, if you get a chance, January 23rd, Groveport, Ohio, Groveport, Madison, Middle School Central,
yes.
7 o'clock bell time. Come on out and see Now, too. I mean, these guys are trying to do something good here in Columbus, Ohio, give good professional wrestling back to Columbus, Ohio, which, let's be honest, it hasn't been here in a while. So come on out and support them.
Yeah, I just want to thank you, John, for giving me the opportunity to promote New Ohio Wrestling. Like I said, we're a growing promotion, so we appreciate when we're able to get exposure and get the word out for the product and for our upcoming show. Like you said, January 23rd, 7 p.m. bell time, Groveport Madison Middle School Central. And, fundraiser for Groveport Madison Marching Band. So come out, enjoy a good family-friendly show, and support a good cause.
All right, with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of this break, I will be back to wrap up this episode, so stick around. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with the Rugby Thug, Trent Baker, and I'm glad that he could come on and talk about his career and talk about New Ohio Wrestling, which, again, they're having a big show, January 23rd, Groveport, Ohio. It is at the Groveport Madison Middle School Central, which is over on East Main Street in Groveport, at 7 o'clock bell time. Again, it's a chance, a fundraiser to help out the Groveport Madison Marching Band. So if you got nothing going on Saturday, January 23rd, you need to come on out, man. You definitely do. And let me tell you real quickly where you can get in touch with New Ohio Wrestling online. Of course, they have a Twitter. It's at New Ohio Wrestling, no G on the end of that. And of course, they have a Facebook, facebook.com/New Ohio Wrestling. So check out those two areas where you can find out all the information about how you can get tickets and everything. Now, too, is definitely going to be a great evening of professional wrestling. You're helping out the band at Groveport Madison, and you're helping out NOW, too. They're trying to build something here in Columbus, so you're helping out on two fronts. So definitely come on out if you can. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of the show where I tell you about something that's cool. I tell you about something I dig, something that I think is noteworthy, and even though we got some new music, that's right, can you hear it? It's time for Orlando's Faves! I got two faves for this installment of the PVD cast, two things I think you need to check out or definitely take a look at. And one of them is brand new and the other one is from a couple of years ago, so I'm going to start off with the brand new item. I am a huge film buff, as you know. If you are an avid listener of this podcast, you know I love film. And there was a film that I saw a trailer for a few months back that really got me curious. I really wanted to see it. And it's a French film. It's called The Lady in the Car with Glasses and a Gun. Now, I know that not everybody enjoys movies that have subtitles, because you have to read, and you do with this one, because unless you speak fluent French, I don't think you're going to understand what the heck's going on in the film. But I checked it out. It's on iTunes. It actually dropped the same day that it came out in theaters. It dropped on iTunes, and I watched it, and if you're a fan of, like, Alfred Hitchcock movies, I think you would really dig this film. It's a little bit out there at the beginning, but when it all comes together at the end, wow, it's really nicely done. It's kind of a murder mystery.
And I really dug it. I really highly recommend it for those folks that want a good mystery movie. You don't mind reading subtitles. Definitely check out The Lady in the Car with Glasses and a Gun. And there you go. There's number one for Orlando's faves. But here's the second one coming at you. Recently, I was telling a co-worker of mine about this web series that was out 2 years ago in 2013. And because I was telling him about it, I thought I'd sit back and enjoy it one more time. So I revisited a web series that you can find on YouTube called John Davis Gets a Sex Robot. Really funny stuff. And there's only 6 episodes, and they're about 4 or 5 minutes long. It stars Michael McMillian, Ricky Lindholm, and Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho is in about, I think, 4 of the episodes, and he is phenomenal playing the obnoxious pal of John Davis named Rob. It's a really funny, funny web series. It's really interesting. It's a little bit dirty. It's a little perverted, so keep that in mind. But overall, I definitely think you should check it out if you want a good laugh. John Davis Gets a Sex Robot. And guess what? There's no subtitles with that, so there you have it. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, before I wrap things up, let me tell you about something else real quick that I think you need to know about, and that, of course, is Bluehost.com. It's the official web hosting service for the PVDcast. Bluehost offers great customer service and competitive pricing. And right now, Bluehost has slashed its prices once again. So you need to go over to Bluehost.com and check out the information because, hey man, there's no excuse for not having your own website for whatever reason you want. So again, head on over to Bluehost.com and get all the information. I can tell you, Bluehost is an awesome web hosting service because that's what hosts the PVDcast.com website. Well, with that, let me tell you how you can get in touch with me as I wrap up this episode. You can get in touch with me a couple different ways. If you'd like to shoot me an email, you may do so. Simply just send it on over to johnorlando@pvdcast.com. If you want to tweet me, I'm @PVDMVP. And that's also the same user handle where you can find me on Instagram. Though I gotta admit, I'm still not very good with Instagram. Maybe that'll be one of my things I work on for 2016. So, hey, and let me know. Do you like the new music? Do you think it sucks? You know, let me know. Because, if, you know, I think it's great. But maybe you don't. So, let me know what you think. So, all right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to wrap things up. And with that, I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening.